Hello and welcome to Witchy Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, women's holistic health coach and fellow recovering perfectionist. This podcast was created to show you that your body is not in the way. It is actually leading your way. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Witchy Wellness Radio. And again, I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, and you're listening to episode number 42 with Stephanie Lundgren Nielsen, Building Self-Awareness. So building self-awareness can be kind of this catch-all phrase that you might hear in something like yoga or maybe hear me talk about here on Witchy Wellness Radio. But it's really understanding how all of our past impact us today and that our bodies and minds actually remember and act through a clouded lens of our past experiences. And we tend to carry this negativity and emotional baggage that we actually encountered and maybe sometimes felt subject to, whether it's from our distant past or from more current life. But eventually this becomes our way of normal, of experiencing our world around us. And honestly, we just lose touch with who we were before all these problems started weighing us down and really adversely affecting our well-being. So needless to say, this imbalance can negatively impact how we function and interact with others in our daily lives. And this is where building self-awareness comes in key. And I'm so excited for today's episode with Stephanie Lundgren Nielsen. And she helps us how to understand how to build a self-awareness through understanding the importance of sleep, of worrying well. Yes, it's possible. How to interpret the events in our human needs and how to meet them. And all of these topics covered in today's episode will help you understand what's going on below that radar in your mind and in your body. Are you feeling weighed down by life and don't know how to take back the reins again? Well, in episode 42, Building Self-Awareness, take back your control and learn how to start building your self-awareness today. Please enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the show. Again, I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, and today we are talking with Stephanie Lundgren Nielsen. She is a stress management consultant, and today we're talking all about how to develop your self-awareness. So I'm so excited to dive all into this with you today, Stephanie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And this is one of my favorite topics, and we both have studied some of the same things. And I think this is such a big thing for people to understand and developing their self-awareness, especially when we start to get into more holistic modalities, which, you know, are very beneficial. They're very good. But sometimes we get wrapped up in doing, at least I did, doing everything right and adding more and more and more in, but we realize it's actually counteracting our health or our progress or our sanity. So I'm excited for us to start to talk about this because I think a lot of people are starting to wake up to the fact of how powerful self-awareness actually is.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's really exciting right now.
And as most of our listeners already know, we always start off kind of getting to know our guest right from the start and how they got to doing the work they do today. I've heard your beautiful story before, and I know I really learn from people's stories, and it's really a hero's journey. And the common thread that everybody has is, you know, you just keep showing up and having that self-awareness and that courage to keep growing and loving yourself through it all. So would you please kind of give us a rundown of your story of how you got into stress management and the stuff that you do today?
Yeah, sure. It's a bit of a long, messy story, I would say. and I could probably, go on for quite a while, but in an effort to somewhat be brief, I think what I will say is that I was one of those kids, you know, from probably my very first memories that I have, that was rather highly sensitive to the world around me. So particularly, you know, people's words and actions. And, you know, as all children are, right? We have no choice but to absorb and take in whatever goes on around us and whatever is directed to us. But I think some kids just naturally are more resilient to it than others. And I was one of those poor souls that, you know, I began to carry a burden of weight very young. And I think it just kept piling on throughout my young life. So, you know, with that tone set at a young age, you know, all the experiences I had just seemed to leave pretty significant impressions upon me. And, you know, when you're young, and depending on the environment that you grow up in, if it's not very nurturing, from, you know, an emotional standpoint, it can actually do a bit of damage. You know, nothing horrific or anything of that nature, just kind of living your life, but yeah, without that resilience, that emotional resilience. So yeah, just like everybody, went through my school years, and, you know, decided, when I was trying to choose a career path or, you know, a field to study, the logic in my mind at the time was, well, life is going to be really awful. It's going to be really hard. And I just want to study something that I know will allow me to have a good paying job. Like, I wasn't going for riches or anything, but I just wanted a steady income so that I knew I'd have a roof over my head, I'd have food on the table, and I could survive comfortably. Like, that was my goal in life, which when I look back, it just kills me. So it's so depressing and heavy. But anyway, so I went to a civilian university, studied some sciences for a bit, decided to join the military, and, you know, followed that path for a decade. Got out, worked as an engineer in the civilian world, and then got to a point, let's say I finished school in 2000 and then, you know, began my working career, and I got to 2015 and coinciding with a back injury getting really bad and needing surgery, and I had to stop work for an extended period of time as a result. And at that moment, that was kind of where it felt like my entire life just came crashing down on me. And it wasn't really that anything in particular had happened. It was probably more, you know, the last straw kind of thing that broke the camel's back. And I remember coming out of my surgery and thinking, okay, as soon as I got off these pain pills, which I did after like 3 days, but as soon as I get off of these, I need to meditate every day. And the thing is I hadn't read a book about it. I didn't have somebody next to me doing it all the time, talking about it. It just came to me that I knew I needed to do this. And I had this feeling like I had to empty my head out of everything that was in it, and I needed to start again. And so that's what I did. And I meditated every day. When I started to calm down, I started to meditate on the question of what is my purpose in this life? Like, what actually brings me joy? Because I had the really horrible realization that I didn't know what I liked. You know, I could probably tell you 100 things that I didn't like in life and in the world and things like that, but I didn't know what I liked other than my husband, thank goodness. That was pretty much the only thing I decided to keep around. So as I embarked on that journey of sort of trying to figure that out, I found myself, or maybe it was the universe coming through me, I don't know, because I don't remember how it happened. But I Googled hypnotherapy training for where I was living at the time, and found, you know, a full training program and practicum and everything. And for some reason, it just made sense to me at that time that while meditation I was finding was super beneficial and it was really helping me, like I had smiled for the first time. I caught myself smiling after a few months of meditating every day, and it really made me sad because I thought, oh my goodness, I've just realized I've been I just smiled, and it's something new. I mean, I hadn't smiled for months, probably, if not closer to a year. And I thought, okay, meditation, there's something to this for sure, but there's got to be a way. Like if you have if you realize you've got a very specific issue or that has something, it's something that's come up that you need to deal with, you know, yes, you can meditate on it, but maybe, you know, depending on your skill level and your experience, you may be meditating on that problem for a couple of years before it sorts itself out. And I guess really that was kind of the logic with the hypnotherapy, because I thought, well, you know, to support this, you can really go after it with a scalpel almost and really find the particular issue, deal with it, work it through, and then it, you know, it loses its power over you. So that's kind of what took me on this completely different track from engineering and military and everything. And what's kind of funny is even though meditation started it, I focused on hypnotherapy for a long time and then realized I needed to give my clients something else for when they left me, you know, when we were all done, to sort of work to maintain the progress and the gains that they had made. You know, and now with this theme of self-awareness, like you just said, that's really ultimately what it was. I just didn't quite realize it yet. So I went and studied a bit of meditation and became, you know, a meditation teacher, just so I could sort of wrap it up on the other side with that as well. And I found that that worked really well for the people who were willing to do it. Some of them weren't. But for the ones that did, they actually maintained the change that they had made, the improvement they had made, or whatever they had freed themselves of, it stayed away. And so I found that really interesting. And of course, as I was working with my clients, obviously I was now shedding, you know, years and years and years and years of baggage and weight, and gaining more and more clarity, kind of, you know, with each passing month sort of thing. And then eventually we moved to where we are now. Like we just temporarily live in the States. And what was really funny was that I find myself in a smaller town where people are more religious, and they don't necessarily, you know, if they have an emotional issue or something that's bothering them in their life, they don't think, oh, I need to go see a hypnotherapist or something like that, or I need to meditate. It's not the first thing on their mind. And so what I decided to do was go get my certification for stress management consulting, because really that's what I did. The problems that people came to me with were causing them stress, right? And the sort of the effect of that wasn't something that they wanted to continue to live with. For me, the burden of carrying all the baggage from my life, the way I carried it, right? That was stressful. And that caused me stress. And I went down with stress a few times in my life, you know, my young adult life, where I got quite sick as a result of stress. And I guess really the beautiful piece of it sort of at the end and where I am now, I mean, you know, we never finish our journey. It's always unfolding and we're always learning about ourselves and all of that. But from the vantage point I'm at now, I can really look back at the time when I was young and then where, you know, as I see it, I took these wrong paths in my adult life. I joined the military, which really now I know myself well enough to know that was probably the worst place for me that I could have gone. And then with the engineering as well, it's not in me. It's not in my soul, but I, you know, pushed through that life. And now I'm on the other side of that and I can look back and really see it as an experience. I mean, it was a really hard one, but it's like this pocket of time and experiences that I had that, you know, while I feel like it almost broke me completely, now being on the other side of it, I can really see it that I couldn't do the work I do now with people had it not been for those rough times and those really hard experiences and, you know, dark places that I was in my mind, because now I really understand. So every client I have, there's a piece of their story that I think, yep, I know exactly what they're talking about because I've had that experience. And then to sort of pull it to the self-awareness, the more I learned about just simply a normal human body and a normal human mind and how it works and how it doesn't work, it's all normal. And then I, you know, and obviously being able to really see myself in that, I thought, you know, I think other people need to know this. So as I started to shake off the doom and the gloom and the weight, I thought, if only somebody had, you know, helped tap me along the right path. And so that's kind of become my mission, is to help people empower themselves through their own self-awareness. And so I try to share that information. You know, I do workshops and stuff where I'm always trying to give them information from complete opposite perspectives, but just to help them understand themselves, so that at some point, I hope, they cross that magical line in the sand, and that they're able to just have that brief fleeting moment of looking back and seeing the past as something separate from them now, because then that's where everything can change for the better.
That is so beautiful. I got chills listening to that, and I truly believe the same thing. And I know through this podcast and through my coaching, health coaching, holding that place for people, you know, of course you're going to see yourself in their stories as well, and vice versa. And that's why I love having guests like your beautiful soul tell their story, because we can all relate and see, mm-hmm. even if we're going through our dark night of our soul right now, we can still see progress or where we've shown up, or a moment in our lives where we've been proud of ourselves, and use that as engine fuel to start to maybe reach out to somebody like you, or something that sparks inspiration or interest in you. But I think the first thing, and you really poetically described what self-awareness is through your story, is realizing that there's more to this experience than this doom and gloom, or I don't know if I want to say fear-based, because I understand what you're saying is you absorb everything, and then, but you also push it down and you just want to play safe and play small and, you know, have a secure job. Nothing. It's like you don't, I feel the same way about my past self, is like you just want to play it safe and just like get through it.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, and survive it.
Survive it. Thank you.
Exactly.
And not thrive. And that's a great word. Is like, I ask mm-hmm. myself this every week, if not more, is how can I thrive today? How can I, you know, how switching out of that survival and into thriving, and the self-awareness is what we're talking about today. And so could you kind of dive into maybe more of how you help clients work on self-awareness, like kind of where you start? You talked about hypnotherapy and stress mm-hmm. management consultation, but kind of maybe walk us through about how that looks in your practice.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I can even just go in chronological order. So with the hypnotherapy, the way I've learned it, it's not, you know, so let's just say as an example, someone comes to me and says, I want to quit smoking, and my hypnotherapy method is not to just hypnotize them and say, you don't want to smoke, you don't want to smoke, you don't want to smoke. I think that does work by some people, but I simply don't understand why. I really, like, the smoking is almost irrelevant. I go down, you know, a whole bunch of layers, and we really try to figure out what's at the root cause, like at the very base of that behavior, and deal with that. And normally it's an emotion, right? I mean, everything about us is always about emotions. Every thought we produce, we know, has an emotion. So I'm going down that far, but what's really interesting is always, you know, interactions with people in my client's past come up, right? Because usually a child or a young, you know, let's just say a teenager, but somebody, you know, in the beginnings of their life, they don't generate a horrible emotion just by them just sitting there by themselves, right? Because they don't yet, as long as nothing horrible has happened to them by that point in their life, they don't yet even have the imagination to sort of create these terrible ideas or imaginings to then produce that negative emotion. So it's always coming from the external environment and the people in it. So you're always like, but yeah, basically you know, I'm always working with my clients on, you know, closing out these open negative exchanges that they've had with people in their past. And quite often we do, you know, most of it is actually from childhood, because of course you lack the understanding and the ability to analyze and critique what's coming at you. But by doing that, you know, there's different, different therapies, but, you know, different visualizations I have them work through, let's call it, where, you know, ultimately it's always coming down to what was going on. How were you feeling, you know, based on this? What were you thinking based on what was going on and what you were feeling? Like, what thoughts were going through your mind? And then the real kicker is, how did this affect you? Like, how did you, in that moment, how did you decide to deal with this? Or how did you, what conclusion did you come to? Or what decision did you make in that moment? Like, what coping mechanism did you have to create to get through whatever that was? Because the thing is quite often, like I would say probably 80% of the time, when they then tell me what that, you know, coping mechanism was that they created when they were 5 years old, I say, okay, do you see any evidence of that throughout your life up until today? And they go, oh, yes, I do. And so right there, there's the awareness, like this understanding of this behavior, this way of thinking that I'm immersed in completely in my adult life today. And now I have this understanding. I have this understanding of where it came from, who was involved, what was going on, the emotion and the thinking that kind of got generated in that moment. And of course, that key decision that was made, because that is really what you carry with you. That becomes the programming in your subconscious brain that you then constantly work through without even realizing it doesn't have to be that way. So it's that self-awareness that they get. And the thing is once they've gotten that in a particular session, you can never take it away from them. They may get kind of lazy and they may not care anymore and just let it go, but they can always come back to it if they really decide that they want to hold on to these improvements or this change, and they want to, you know, go forward in a positive way. You can never take that awareness away from them. So then what I did was when I started teaching meditations, I thought, well, I really want to, you know, there's so many people who are afraid of hypnosis or they don't understand it. And at the time, actually, I was living in the Middle East. So there was a whole other layer of, uncertainty or misunderstanding about it. So I thought, you know, I'm going to teach meditation. And what I want to do is with these groups of people, I want to give them the opportunity to also develop some of the self-awareness. So what I did was I wrote some meditations that, you know, aren't your quick 5-minute ones that you can get on an app, but it's, you know, they're longer. I mean, it takes about half an hour at least, if not longer, to work through. But I kind of guide them through some of the visualizations I use with hypnotherapy so that they have the opportunity to go back to, you know, a memory that they have of something that was difficult or hard or maybe a disagreement they had with somebody. And then I kind of have them climb into that memory as we're sitting there at the beginning of the meditation. And then I ask them some of the questions. Now, of course, they're not answering me. It's not sort of a dynamic conversation like that. But that's what I like, is I allow them the privacy to sit there quietly and just kind of work through their memory and their mind with me just guiding them along that path. And they can start to answer some of those questions for themselves. And maybe, you know, my hope is always they find some compassion for themselves. Because we're our worst critic. We're so hard on ourselves. And we always, you know, ultimately, whether we realize it consciously or not, we think it's our fault. We think it's because of us. And, you know, I grew up thinking I was a bad person. Like, my word was badness. And it actually took a psychologist to tell me, oh, that's shame. I was like, oh, okay, shame. Yes, definitely. I was shamed growing up. But, you know, we just don't realize it because it's our normal. It's the filter that we see the world through, and we don't realize that that's not how it truly is. So you gain that awareness. So I did that. And then now what I'm really enjoying right now, and I, you know, I get really excited about is this, you know, stress management work. But it really allows me to venture out and meet with different groups of people that, you know, obviously I would never pull those individuals in for hypnosis or something like that. But I've had the opportunity, like I've worked with counselors, schools, I've worked with fighter pilot instructors at the base here, and I'm actually going to go do more work on the base next year, which I'm really excited about with more people. But the idea is I approach it from a stress perspective because people understand that word and they can relate to it. They don't necessarily understand why they can relate to it, but they know the word and they go, yes, I've had stress in my life. And so then I teach them about it. I ask them if they really know what that is and what happens. I teach them about what happens in the body when it gets stressed out, in the mind, like emotionally what happens, and you know, with your brain, what starts happening to it when you're experiencing stress for an extended period of time. So we know that it's chronic stress. And what's really amazing is that, you know, like counselors, like they've studied to a master's degree level. And I was a little nervous presenting to them because I thought, oh, this, you know, they're going to know this. They're just going to look at me and wonder why they brought me in. Because I do take it to a very basic level because, of course, I want it to be simple and I want to make sure everybody gets it. And they sat there with their mouths gaping open for 4.5 hours during this workshop. They had never, like they just, and they sat there going, oh my gosh, I do that to my child. And you know, cause it was about the kids at the school. That's why I was working with them. But yeah, they were even taking it home. And so we just don't get it. Right? Like all this stuff that happens inside of us, we can't see it. We can't see it objectively normally. So that's really my goal, is to teach people, you know, like I said before, what happens in a normal human body and a normal human brain, right? Like really, what happens? What happens to us when we don't get enough sleep? We think, oh, haha, yeah, I get a little grumpy. No, a whole bunch of stuff happens when you don't get enough sleep. And they need to know that because it's important. You know, a lot of people, like when you're talking to people who are involved, you know, like the fighter pilots, because they're instructors, so they're teaching new future fighter pilots. So it's kind of a big deal. It's an expensive effort, and what you know they don't realize is that you know how like even in school we would study, you know, hardcore for 12 hours, and then maybe some people pull all-nighters and just walk into the exam the next morning without having slept. And some people would say, okay, I'll go to bed for 2 hours, I'll get up again and continue cramming for this test. I mean, I certainly used to do that. And what I've learned through my studies is that human beings, we need 8 hours of sleep. So some people go, oh yeah, I'm good with six. Some people say, oh, I only get four and I'm fine. But the human body and the human brain need 8 hours of sleep. Like sleep, not laying in bed, like not sleep opportunity, but sleep. And the last 2 hours of those 8 hours are where your memory really solidifies. So everything you've taken in from your day, and it, you know, like so if you're learning something new in that kind of an environment, everything that you've learned and taken in, it gets processed through, you know, your deep sleep and your dreams. But it's the last 2 hours of that 8 hour sleep cycle that really make that memory stay. So if you say, okay, I'm going to get up after 6 hours and, you know, finish cramming for this test, you've lost probably, I don't know, more than 40%, 50% of what you crammed in the night before. You've lost it. You don't even stand a chance of retaining it. It's just, but who tells us this? Like yeah, we've all studied, you know, like our entire young lives, we've been in school, right? Never ending. And yet nobody ever told us that. Because for me, I was always the kind of person who I would fall asleep early, but I would wake up. I'd say, okay, I'll get up at 3 a.m. and just finish studying this last bit because I just couldn't keep my eyes open anymore. But now I'm finding out, well, that's why, you know, engineering maybe wasn't my thing because I didn't learn half of it. I was always, you know, missing that critical time where that information would actually like wire into my brain for that understanding and for me to recall it and use it in the future. So something as simple as that. But when people hear that, they go, oh, I got to tell my child that. And oh, that's good to know. And right? So it's just learning about ourselves, just from these slightly different angles, learning about the human needs. And what does that actually, like, what are they? And what does that mean? And the fact that a human need can be met, you know, on a personal level, a social level, a work level, and we meet them in positive, neutral, and negative ways. And the thing is that, you know, of the six that there are, four are really, you know, they're non-negotiable. Like, we have to meet them. So then if you're meeting it in a negative way, in the sense that maybe it's sort of detrimental to somebody else in your family, like, I don't know, let's just say somebody who for a need for significance, and so therefore they're a bully, or they're, you know, dominating in their household to the point where other people are kind of kept in their place and, you know, held back. Like, that would be a negative way of meeting that need. But the thing is, because we have to meet our needs, it's like you would never question it, right? If that was your behavior, you would never turn the lens around and look at yourself and say, huh, why do I meet that need that way? Well, first of all, because you don't even know what's a need. You don't even know what those are. And second, you know, no one's given you the opportunity to actually, yeah, turn that lens around and have a look and go through some of these things and say, maybe there is a better way. Because that's all it takes, is just deciding, I'm going to practice meeting this need in a positive way, or even maybe a neutral way. And then eventually, you know, through using this new way and not using the old way, that change starts to actually happen in your mind. And then you don't even have to think about it. But we don't know those things. So there's all these stressors in our life that we're even just creating through lack of self-awareness. So yeah, that's sort of what I do.
Wow. I love it. And I also think people understand stress. Like you said, it's very approachable. We all feel it pretty much every day for the average person. But self-awareness and the work that you help guide three people through is to pull that layer back and say, okay, you feel stressed. Maybe where do you feel that in your body? Or what emotion does that make you feel when that happens? And then you kind of peel the onion back to, you know, you mentioned a program or something from being a young child where you don't have the filter to really understand what's happening. Between when we're born and I think about, is it 6 or 7 years old, we have completely no filter at all. We're a big sponge where our subconscious absorbs everything.
Yeah, it literally does.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, that's exactly it. 6 to 7 years old.
Yeah.
And because when you're born, it's just a brain. There's no conscious brain and subconscious brain. It's just a brain. And so everything goes in because we need to learn about our environment to survive. And we have no, like, the filter, exactly. Like, your conscious brain will really start to form between 6 and 12, you could say, even though our conscious brain actually isn't finished forming until we're 25, which is kind of an interesting little side note that most people don't realize. But, except for the car rental people. I heard that someone had written that the car rental agencies are the only people in the world that understand that the conscious brain doesn't finish developing until you're 25. And that's why you're not allowed to rent a car until you're 25.
Because ability,
like, our conscious brain gives us the ability to sort of understand and anticipate the result of our actions, right? And that's not fully formed until you're 25 years old. It's crazy. But yeah, up until 6, absolutely everything is going in. And even past that, of course, you're only just starting to really build that filter with all the rules and limits and, you know, proper behaviors and laws and religious dogma and all of that. That starts to build that filter as we get a little bit older. So even when that filter forms, it's not necessarily made up of the good stuff, right? It's all the beliefs and limitations that now literally have been programmed into your mind by the people in your immediate environment when you were at that young age. Some people get really lucky with that lottery. Some people get very unlucky. And then even the ones in between, if, you know, your parents or whoever your caretakers weren't aware of this, then chances are a lot of stuff got in there that, you know, you're only going to realize it, yeah, really, in your mid-20s onward, that you're going to find yourself doing things and thinking certain things, and you're not going to be happy with it. But one, you're going to think, well, that's just who I am. So I have to, like, I'm bad in that area, or that's not good about me. I need to change it, or I want to change it. But you can't change it because you don't understand anything about it, or you know, like, we, our thoughts literally aren't our own. which is crazy, but they're not. And that voice in your head isn't you, right? It's just all of those programs running. It's just the electricity running through all those programs that were put in when you're young. And, you know, your mom getting mad at you for something, telling you you were stupid, or, I mean, all of that stuff. And then that's what we spend the rest of our life telling ourselves if we're not aware. and we don't try to change it.
And I think it doesn't matter. I realize that no matter how much or how little trauma or stressful situations we grew up with, we still have those programs. We still have things to work through. And I know one of my programs I've had to work through and still from time to time comes up is the, you know, perfectionist, like everything's okay kind of mentality, that I'm okay, you know, nothing is wrong. And that can be very anxiety producing when you start to do this kind of work or self-awareness work, because you're like, you have to be okay with not being okay. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was a big old can of worms.
And
I opened that up. And I think, you know, people like yourself finding a practitioner to help guide you through this, because, you know, you're showing up and doing the work, but someone like Stephanie is going to have the tools, like we talked about, like meditation or hypnotherapy, that are going to help not only gain that self-awareness, but they're going to empower you to help move forward and move through it. Because I don't know if I get excited now, but when I feel like my life's falling apart and things are really like a mess, or, you know, anxiety producing, I'm like, ooh, something's going to change. So, you know, I don't know what, but there's something moving, there's something brewing up. But I'm not to say that I'm always okay with that, but I tell myself that I have these practices to ground and center. Okay, where do we go? And I like what you said is in your own story, and I know this very likely in other people's, including myself, is you knew how you didn't want to feel and what you didn't like. And that's very powerful. And do a lot of your clients kind of usually come with that? Is like, you know, I don't know what I want in life, but I know I don't want to be depressed anymore, or, you know, I don't want to be angry every time this happens.
I think what's really interesting is that the way, so again, like sort of my approach to and how I learned to use hypnosis, it's really the... what I require is that when my client comes to me, you know, unless it is just, hey, I've just been curious about this, let's just explore. So that's fine. Like we can go and kind of work through stuff, and they can gain self-awareness that way, but it's really, there's no specific purpose, right? Like we're not going after a very particular problem. But normally people come to me because quite literally they're at their wit's end with a problem. Like I've had clients in the past who, you know, one woman had an unhealthy relationship with food. So she'd been binging on a particular type of food for over 30 years of her life. So, and she couldn't stop, and she'd gone to see, you know, all kinds of mental health professionals. And don't get me wrong, it's not to say that they can't help with something like that, but, you know, like we're all different, and every problem we have at each different time, we're more receptive to different modalities of help, right? Different messages. The people that she saw when she saw them couldn't help her. And so she came to see me, and, you know, her problem was very specific and she was really tired of it. So what happens then is when she comes to me, it's kind of like that's her whole world, right? Like that's really... it becomes the lens that she's seeing everything out of. But when she's answering my questions, because I take 2 hours and ask questions about, you know, their entire life, basically, just to sort of start to get the puzzle pieces coming together. But every answer she gives me is really going to be tainted by that problem. which is a good thing for me because that's what I want. If somebody comes to me and they say, oh, well, you know, I'd like to quit smoking, but they don't really, and their real problem is something entirely different, when they're answering my questions, that filter is going to be related to the problem they won't tell me about and not the smoking. And I've actually had that happen, and I sit there and I struggle. And initially I won't quite understand why I can't figure it out. And it's not that I solve the problem for them, but there's always a path that kind of becomes clear and I can't find it. So, so the hypnosis really works phenomenally well. If basically you have extreme clarity on your issue or your problem or your thing you want to change and you're ready for it. Like I had someone come to meet me for I always do free 30-minute consultations. And so we'd met in a restaurant and she just started to cry. She sat down and she started to cry. And I said, you know what? Not to sound insensitive, but this is perfect. You're ready. Like we can work together because you're at your wit's end.
Yeah.
And that's perfect because you're going to have the energy to do this. You're going to have the willingness to really, you know, put the effort in and, you know, answer the questions honestly. Because, you know, it's funny, I always say to them, you know, I'm always going to be asking you questions. And if you think in your head, even for a split second, ooh, I don't want to tell her that. That's, you know, it's too embarrassing or whatever. I go, that's the stuff that you really need to tell me. Because that's the important stuff. Like the stuff that we think we want to hide. And there's something significant there. So the stuff that we think we're really ashamed of, that's a ball and chain weighing you down, guaranteed. And that's the stuff that needs to really be dug up, not because, you know, we need to embarrass you or anything, but that's really, yeah, it's a ball and chain, guaranteed. The meditation, you know, like I said, it kind of allows people to work on their own. And quite often I have people that then say, okay, yeah, you know what? I actually do have something very specific that I would like to come see you with, and that's fine. And then the stress is more general actually, because that's kind of, it's a different, they're typically workshops or groups of people. And that's more, the way I see that is I'm trying to catch people's attention, right? I'm trying to hold their attention long enough to be able to get them to just cross a toe over that magical line in the sand where they start to realize, you know what, I need to look into this a little more. So maybe it's finding some books, or maybe it's going to see somebody for help. Maybe it's just talking about it more openly, like whatever it is. But that journey just starts to begin at that point. And ultimately, for everything, the way I see it is, it always ends for the better, in the sense that when we as people become more self-aware, we have to develop more compassion for ourselves. Like we have to. And I'm not saying a ton, but you know, a little ounce here and there, we keep adding to the pot of compassion for ourselves. And when we, because we're never taught that either, right? We're taught you're supposed to love and care for everybody else, and nobody ever talks about yourself. But you can't care for other people if you don't care for yourself. It just doesn't work. And of course, then we think we're faulty because, okay, I'm supposed to really love this person and care, but I don't really, or I don't care that much, and I must be a terrible person. But we were never taught to care for ourselves. So through all this self-awareness that you gain, yeah, you can't help but actually feel more compassion for yourself, and in a way, pride, right? Like you look back to your younger self and you go, wow, like you really did go through a rough time, and you know, good for you for getting to the other side of it. I'm proud of my younger self. But then what happens is that compassion, then you have it in you, and you actually truly do have the ability to start giving it out and start, you know, understanding people from a different perspective. And there's more kindness. And that's kind of how you change the world, right? One person at a time.
Yeah. Starting with yourself first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it took me a long time to realize that, of course.
Oh yeah. Me too. Yeah. And I still have to remind myself of that sometimes, is, you know, taking care of myself and doing the work, I say, through meditation or some other self-awareness exercise or practice, is non-negotiable. Because mm-hmm. I just, plain and simple, feel better. You know, life...
Yeah, definitely.
Life feels brighter. You know, like you said, the clarity, where I'm just like, you know, I might go I might have spurts where I might not meditate as regularly or might not work out as regularly, but then I know that doesn't matter. It's because I never knew how good I could feel until I felt that way. And it becomes addicting. It's this new identity, who I really am. And I get back on the horse again and let go of whatever shame or guilt I laid on myself for not keeping up with it. And, you know, just keep going. And I think a lot, I mean, the word self-care now is more regularly heard. And I think a lot of people think of things like
massages,
bubble baths, which I love, but not, you know, what we're talking about is also self-care. The self-awareness is holding yourself accountable. You know, I think of it as reparenting yourself or learning new skills to reparent yourself. And it gets to be stressful when you're like, I have to be doing all the right things in this mindset and all the things at once is kind of how I felt at times. And I know that you talk a lot about how to worry well. Could you kind of relate that into all of what we're talking about today?
Yeah, well, so worrying is an innate ability of humans, right? So we have that ability because we have a conscious brain, and that kind of goes back to that ability to look ahead and sort of anticipate the outcome of maybe a decision or an action or something like that. So worrying comes from that. And when you think about it, you know, back in the day when we were living in caves and we had to go out and hunt in the jungle or whatever it was, and there were saber-toothed tigers that we might encounter, upon that meeting with this creature who very likely was going to eat you for dinner, if you were to just stand there, you know, as the stress response kicks in, of course, fight or flight, and you think, oh, you know, that tiger probably just had dinner. I'm sure I'm fine. I'm just going to carry on my merry way. Well, yeah, you're probably going to get eaten. But if you stood there in that moment and your instinct was to start anticipating, like worrying, but anticipating, okay, well, what could happen here? If this thing comes at me, ooh, I'm going to grab that rock, or I could run across the river because cats don't like water, or whatever it is. You start solving that problem. I don't want to get eaten. Like, that's worst case scenario here. What am I going to do? Right? Like, that's kind of like worrying well. You have a problem. You're going to worry about it. Yes, you're going to put your focus on it and your attention and your problem-solving skills. Okay. But the purpose is to come to a solution. And that was what kept our species alive, arguably, right? And we obviously thrive to a point where we're going to kill our environment. But anyway, that's a different discussion. So then coming back now to today, you know, we're aware of so much information. Like, it's, we drown in it completely. There's no way that you can stay on top of it or understand it all, or, you know, so we're just bombarded with it continually, all this information. And then stuff happens in our life that, you know, okay, yeah, it's something that we're not happy with, or it's a problem, or it's an issue, or it's going to cause us, I don't know, sadness or whatever. And you focus on it. Right? You put your focus on, you think about it, and you kind of chew on it for a while and ponder it and ultimately worry about it. But the question is, were you ever taught when you were young that, yeah, if you have a problem, you're meant to worry about it, but you only worry to solve it, to come to a solution? You don't just worry to stew over it or to ruminate over it, like whatever term you want to use, but never kind of getting rid of it. Right? Like, there's a complete difference there. So yes, we have this ability to worry. It's kept our species alive. So it's really not going anywhere. But we forgot how to worry well, meaning solve the problem. Now, I know usually the problems that we face, some of them are enormous. Some of them, you know, we feel like either they're too new or they're just too big and we can't even define the edges. And that's fine. But the point is to then say, like, if you've kind of gone through it and you say, okay, this is something I have control over, so I own this and it belongs to me and it's nobody else's, and yeah, okay, I've thought about it and there's no quick fixes, So then you're just left with this monstrosity of a problem that, you know, is going to cause you worry and likely keep you up at night and all of that. So what do you do? Well, start trying to think of a baby step. Like, what's one small thing you can do? Maybe it's the next morning when you get up or what have you, that you can say, I'm going to go Google something related to this problem, and that's going to start me down the path, or that'll answer this initial question I have, and I'll have a better idea of even what to Google next. Like, whatever it is, but just make that baby step plan for the next day. And what I find so remarkable is that that's all your brain needs to calm down. Like, and I've actually had this experience where, I don't know, maybe about a year ago, we have our house back in Canada rented out, and there'd been a big kerfuffle and a change of management company, and we'd had this period of time when the house was empty and the pool had a leak in it, and, you know, I was committed down here. I couldn't go up. My husband definitely couldn't go up, but this was my problem. Like, my husband couldn't deal with it. This was mine to figure out what to do. And I was quite overwhelmed by it, because that's a pretty helpless feeling. You need to be, you know, up in Canada 24/7 right now to sort out this problem and work with contractors, but you can't be. So what do you do? And who do you trust to do that for you when you don't know anybody to do that for you? And so I'd gone to bed and, you know, turned out the light, and I was just laying there, and I actually caught myself with my heart racing. My hands were all clenched, and I had, I don't know, like a contorted face of some kind. I could feel the tension in my face, and, you know, my eyebrows were all crinkled up, and I kind of had to laugh, and I was like, okay, stress response. I hear you loud and clear. Like, what? I'm just laying in bed in the dark. Nothing's happening. What's going on? How did this happen? And so then I always, you know, say, okay, go backwards. So I started going backwards through my thoughts. And I said, oh, I'm stressing about the house. Like, I don't know what to do. And I said, okay, I'm going to use my technique that I always tell my clients to use. So I started going through those questions. Okay, well, yeah, definitely I have control over this. Like, I have to deal with this. It's mine. It's nobody else's. There's no quick fix, because, yeah, I didn't even quite understand the magnitude of the problem yet. We didn't know where the pool was leaking, and there was all these issues. So I said, okay, what's one thing I can do tomorrow morning to start on this journey of dealing with this issue? And I said, okay, tomorrow morning I'm going to Google blah, 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 and then I'll take it from there. That'll lead me down some path, and yeah, I'll just be one step closer. I know that. I don't know what it'll tell me, but I know that I'll be one step closer. And quite literally in that moment, I could feel the relaxation just kind of sweep over my entire body. And all the tension went away. My heart stopped racing and pounding in my chest. And I thought, okay, good. Now I know I'm going to be able to sleep. So that's the point. I was worrying not well, and of course not even realizing I was doing it. And then when I took control back of my brain and said, no, we're going to do this properly. Just ask those four questions, come with an answer. That's all it took. And my whole body and mind responded to that. It's really just to Google something. Like, that was it. So that's worrying well.
I think quite well. Yeah. Yeah, I think I can definitely relate to that, and trusting that that's enough, saying, okay, what's one small manageable step that or direction I can go in, and doing one thing at a time. Because I, you know, working health-wise, I know a lot of my clients, we kind of come the same approach to a lot of like cravings or stress eating, or maybe every time you get a headache, it's like, okay, well what's happening in those moments? And it's, mm-hmm. well,
definitely,
you know, it's the first time I sat down after work and I started to think about XYZ, like a big thing, like planning my wedding, or, you know, buying a house or anything. And so without even realizing it, your body's already trained to start worrying. Yeah. And what can I do to calm it down? And it's like, okay, let me eat sugar, or, you know, let me have a glass of wine. And in moderation, those things are not bad at all. But when our body takes control, and like you said, you know that you almost, it was laughable when your body was cringed up like that. And And all it takes is just that little tinge of awareness and a deep breath for me. And it's just the release. Like you said, it's just...
Like and I actually want to add something to this because it's, and I know a lot of people might misunderstand us saying take control back, right? Mm. That they think I have to control everything. And of course, that's the other big lie we're told. And so I want to give an example. I had a client a long time ago who came to me. Actually, that was the person who started crying when we first met. And she, her problem was that she had had a yeast infection for it was like 14 or 15 months. And she'd been to 10 different doctors and they, you know, obviously kept saying, yes, this is what it is and giving her drugs. And it just kept coming back. And obviously that's a horrific place to be for that. I can't even for that long, that would just be horrible. So she just couldn't take it anymore. And so she had come to me to say, you know, I don't know even really what you do, but maybe you can help me. And I thought, okay, well, let's see where this goes. And so again, just like with the smoking, you pretty much forget about, like I ask a few questions about the presenting issue, but then I forget about it. So that was kind of pushed to the side and I delved into her life. And really what it came down to, so the whole issue for her that was causing this you know, illness or this imbalance in her body, it was control. And she was ultimately trying to control the people in her life, like her family, her kids, you know, that were getting married, the in-laws, you know, her immediate family in this sense. And it was all from a good place in her heart. Like she really, she, there was no malice there. She was just trying to protect them and keep them healthy and make sure, you know, they, I don't know, had good, prosperous lives and comfortable, safe, secure lives. That was really the intent behind it. But of course it came out of her as controlling, trying to control. And if they didn't listen to her, she'd get really frustrated and upset. And it just caused a whole bunch of issues within her family, like with the dynamic. And so as we worked on that and getting to the root of where that came from, and of course we went to childhood and there was a whole bunch of stuff there, nothing traumatic, like normal family and childhood stuff, but that got misprogrammed basically. And it, you know, it came out and it came out of her as trying to control things. And then this is what had made her sick. So after we finished working through this process, I had actually touched base with her because she'd moved away. And I think it was like a year later. And she said it never came back because now she was aware. So the word control, I mean, there's two sides to that. And it's really important to understand the two sides, right? And like taking control back, you know, for us could be having a horrible response to something, becoming self-aware, recognizing that response, and then saying, okay, yeah, you know what? That's fine. Like, I can't do anything about this. And finding peace in that and calm, right? That's taking control, even though you're just completely pushing it off the side and saying, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. So it's important to understand. Obviously, because we definitely are told we should control things, and that's not what we're talking about at all.
Mm-mm. And thank you for clarifying that. And another word for that is, you know, surrendering, which can be a triggering word for people.
Oh, it's an S word. For sure.
But it's the trusting, like just how you beautifully said all of that, it's trusting that I can't do anything to change or control this right now, and that's okay, and finding solace in that. And honestly, like some of the deepest moments of joy and gratitude and just very high level emotions in my life is some of the darkest days is where I was able to surrender into that. Boy. Is that a big...
Allow it, right?
Allow.
That was my husband's word after the last week-long retreat. That was his word, allow. And he said it was so much easier to say in meditation than surrender. And it was really interesting because I was like, you know, I think I can grasp it better. Because surrender and let go for me, I'm still really working on it. I was actually hoping the week-long event in Niagara Falls was going to be my tipping point, but it really wasn't. I just went deeper into the river and started to drown. So, but the allow, like I really allow and just play. Those are the two words I keep trying to come back to, you know, like it's not meant to be hard. We're meant to play. That's the point of this life, is to have these experiences. And some of them are good, some of them are terrible. But we're here to have these experiences in the human body, right? So try to just keep that little tiny hint of lightheartedness and playfulness in your heart as you go forward, and know that you're going to get bumped around, and you know, you'll go up, you'll go down, and it's for the experience.
And I think this is a beautiful note to end on, and allow it all to be wrapped up. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about, or kind of wrap everything together before we end our interview today?
Really want to impress upon the listeners that, you know, we're not asking for a complete change in lifestyle. We're not telling you to go all woo-woo and meditate on the top of a mountain without any clothes on. It really doesn't take that at all. I started with probably 5 minutes of very distracted meditating every day. And it really changed my life, like completely for the better. So think of it not as, you know, meditation or hypnosis or anything in particular. Just think of it as starting to try to understand yourself better. And you can start with any topic that interests you, whether it's, yeah, like sleep. I mean, I find that topic fascinating, or stress, or like mindfulness stuff, or yoga, or I don't know. I should probably think of some more scientific things. Well, yeah, like Dr. Joe Dispenza work, right? Because that is very scientific. Coming at it using quantum, well, this may be intimidating to some people, but like quantum physics and things like that. But there's all these different perspectives nowadays. It's not just, you know, the yogi or the Buddhist monk or something like that that you have to learn from. Because personally, I find that really difficult to understand that language and that way of thinking. But there's so much out there that's just plain language, really simple, and really quite easy to relate to. And when you start to see yourself in those words, that's where the change can start to happen. Now, it's one thing just to read, you know, this information, but you need to actually start applying at least bits and pieces of it. And that's where you're going to find your self-empowerment in there. And then the world is your oyster. Everything changes. Mm-hmm. Take back your power.
I agree. The game changer, like you just said there, it was taking this knowledge and implementing it. And that is where your true empowerment lies. It's not by reading more, gaining more knowledge. It's actually walking the walk. And however that looks for you. And it should be fun. Something that you like enjoying to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on, but also, you know, as we talked on the show earlier, for showing up for yourself first, because without doing that, you wouldn't be here talking to all of us today and shining your bright, beautiful light with all of your clients and workshops that you do. So thank you from my heart, and I'm sure all the listeners' hearts as well.
Oh, thanks for saying that.
Mm-hmm. And I always love to challenge our listeners, because we are so grateful for having you on the show and learning from your experiences and your expertise of, you know, how can we show up for you and provide you with some value or be of service for you today?
Well, the whole reason why I do the work that I do is to help people empower themselves. And the reason why, as I've probably alluded to a few times now, is that I really truly believe and have experienced in myself is that the more self-aware I became and the more I understood myself, just as a human being, not, you know, as Stephanie, the more compassion I felt for myself. And I really do notice the difference in how I interact with others in my life, you know, even complete strangers. There's definitely more of a gentle understanding and compassion that's there. I mean, it's not huge, it's not overwhelming, but it's there. And the energy then changes, right? And so I ask everybody who listens, just do something every day that will help you build your self-awareness. And literally, it could be 2 minutes of just paying attention to your breath, like whatever it is. Because I know that if you do that for just a little bit of time, then you're going to be just one more person going out into the world who is more compassionate, because you feel a little bit more love for yourself. And then the work that I do is just amplified. hugely. And that would bring such joy, because that's really truly why I do the work I do now. So do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think the more self-awareness that we kind of generate or peel back, we realize, at least in my experience, is that we all are one body. We're all one collective mind of humanity. And that compassion you feel for yourself is just blossoms to, like you said, to everybody you meet, even strangers.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful thing. And thank you again for coming on the show. I had such a lovely time talking with you and listening to your beautiful stories.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And remember, open up, surrender, trust, and let your body lead the way.